loose ball. Ewing goes up. The basket counts. He gets it over to the doctor. Tie ball game. Here's a shot. Julius. He scores! He scores!
Anthony for three.
Bang! That one goes down and the game is tied.
Here's Durant moving on Tucker. He turns. He shoots. Yes!
Talking Knicks, Nets, and all things across the association, this is Pick and Pod on WFUV Sports.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of Pick and Pod, WFUV Sports NBA podcast. Along with Chris Persiainen and Miles Grossman, I'm Colin Lochran. Happy to be with you. Miles, yesterday was a deceptively great day of basketball. A lot to get to. Knicks, Nets, you know the drill. Before we do get to any of it, though, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, and it is kind of the time of the year where, you know, NCAA tournament is taking over pop culture-wise. NBA fans have kind of been lulled to sleep a little bit before the playoff season starts to ramp up, but you're exactly right. It was the Bucks and the Lakers last night, double OT, Reeves the hero, and a couple other really nice games last night.
Chris, great to have you with us as always. Did you catch any of Bucks-Lakers last night? What a game that was. Lakers getting things done in Milwaukee, winning 128-124, double overtime.
Yeah, I tuned in once Twitter was basically saying, hey, if you're not watching this game, get it on right now. Anthony Davis, 34-23. Like, do you guys know how many Defensive Player of the Year awards that Tim Duncan won in his career? Take a guess, Miles.
Take a guess. Yeah,
Tim Duncan, DPOY. How many?
I would like a decent number. No.
So what? Let's get a number.
Five.
Colin.
I was gonna say one or two.
Zero. Tim Duncan never won Defensive Player of
the
Year.
I just knew it was a trick question. God damn it.
despite probably being the best defender in the NBA for so many of the years of his career, because of the system he played in, because of his role in that system. A little undervalued. I think Anthony Davis might finish his career with zero Defensive Player of the Years as well. I'm not saying he's the player Tim Duncan was, because Tim Duncan's a top 7-8 player in NBA history. But Anthony Davis is such an incredible talent. He's such an incredible athlete. And I think he might have that similar fate of never winning Defensive Player of the Year, despite having ridiculous career averages for blocks and steals and having a huge impact, forcing teams to game plan around his presence. I think he showed last night that, you know, maybe it took two overtimes to get the stats he did, but you can't really forget about him.
Can I give Austin Reeves some love as well?
You can. You may.
29 points, 14 rebounds, 10 assists, a triple-double.
Hilarious.
48 minutes worth of action, 10 of 20 from the field, which is crazy efficient given this game had two overtimes in it. The Lakers are a team where just when you think you're completely out on them, they do one more little thing to pull you right back in. Now, I'm not saying the Lakers are a major threat to take out a team like Denver, but they're interesting. And this time of year, sometimes you just want a team to be interesting so you have one more thing to watch.
They feel like the type of team that can get hot in a seven-game series. You know, I was talking to my cousin about this, believe it or not. The Knicks have been so solid, but there's something odd about the Lakers in a short spurt that just seems like they could hang with the best of them the same way the Knicks could. I mean, they're one of those teams that, in a smaller sample size, LA gets LeBron back. If they're healthy at the right time, they are kind of a force to be reckoned with out of the play-in, probably, in the West.
And I look at that Western Conference. It's so deep and it's so effective on multiple levels, where a lot of the top teams in the conference are young, hungry. They don't necessarily have the experience that you'd like a champion to have. But some of those teams on the lower end, Chris, Golden State, Los Angeles, even Phoenix, they've got guys that have been around the block to the point where you start to wonder, could they play spoiler? Is it a little bit like that whole Brooklyn Nets conversation we were having a couple of years ago, where it was, they just have to get in? Or when Cleveland had LeBron, it was that sort of conversation, where if LeBron gets into the playoffs, he's going to be a threat against Eastern teams that just ran through the regular season precisely because it was the regular season.
Well, Colin, you know, I think this is the mindset that a lot of Laker fans had. If you remember the term cracked the code, right? The Lakers lost their first game in that playoff series against the Denver Nuggets, but Lakers Twitter and Laker fans everywhere were really clear about one thing. by the end of that game, the Lakers crawled out of that early hole, and they cracked the code. They knew how to beat the Nuggets. Well, maybe they did, but they sure didn't show it, because they lost the next game, and the next game, and then they got swept. So even though every game was close, the morale points, the participation trophies are given out in the Staples Center, the Crypto.com locker room. There was no Western Conference Finals championship for them because they didn't even make it. And I think that's the key here is you can never count out LeBron James and you can never count out Anthony Davis and you especially can never count them out as a duo, but they haven't been a heavy hitter this season, and there's a reason for that.
And just one more thing on this broad topic of the two conferences. Milwaukee looks a little bit better now after Boston took that horrendous loss the other night to Atlanta. Now, I know it's the regular season. I know Boston is well ahead of everyone else. Milwaukee looks a little better now because it proves anyone can be anyone on any given night if the right guys get hot at the right time. And you look at that Eastern Conference, Boston is beatable. We've seen it before in the playoffs. Milwaukee, I don't know how this is going to go for them with Doc Rivers in the playoffs now after the mid-year coaching change. Cleveland is young. Orlando's young. Mm-hmm. The Knicks have some injury concerns. That Eastern Conference may be more open than people think. And Miami, we know what they can do. You never know when Philly's going to wake up out of nowhere. I just thought last night was fascinating from that angle of things, to really think about the ramifications a single game could have on the playoffs from a tone perspective. Because if you're a team like the Knicks, and you see the Lakers beat the Bucks, and you see the Hawks beat the Celtics, don't you think to yourself, why can't we do that?
It's trending in that direction. I'll give you that. That it seems like at one point, the Boston Celtics, it was their NBA to lose. I mean, 32-3 at home. They're obviously, you know, given their record, they are going to be the one seed. They're going to have home court advantage in any playoff series they participate in. They do seem slightly more human coming off that Atlanta game. I think, you know, particularly against Atlanta, they're the squad that's battling with Brooklyn for the final spot in the Eastern Conference play-in. So Atlanta is no solid team by any means at the moment, yet they showed that Boston is a tad human. And I think it is trending in the direction that the East is more open because a couple weeks ago, we were kind of talking about the Celtics like it was really their championship to lose. And it still seems that way, but surely slightly less than maybe 2-3 weeks ago.
I just don't get the hype. All right, because you take a look at the Western Conference standings, I think they tell the picture. Okay, I mean, look at the Houston Rockets right now, right?
Don't get the hype regarding what, if you don't mind me asking?
The Lakers.
Okay.
The Lakers. You know, they're 7-3 in their last 10. They've won 4 straight. I think the Houston Rockets at 36-35, they've won 9 of their last 10 because they're on a 9-game winning streak. Like, that's the hottest team in the NBA right now. They're not even in the Western Conference play-in. The Lakers are the 9 seed. Sure, they'll come out of the play-in tournament with the playoff spot. Maybe they'll be better than the Kings, who have had a really tough up-and-down season. From an outsider's perspective looking in, they're the same team they were last year, except now the teams have the film on them. Did the Lakers beat the Pelicans if Ingram is back healthy? The Pelicans are 7-3 in their last 10. They're 20-14 at home and 24-14 on the road. They can take their show on the road. They remind me of the Kings of last season. The Pelicans aren't a team you expect to see in the conference finals, but they are a team you sure as hell don't want to play in the first round. So for the Los Angeles Lakers, they don't even get to play the Pelicans. They've got to beat the Timberwolves or the Thunder or the Clippers. Can the Lakers beat the Thunder in a series? Can LeBron pick apart the inexperienced young Thunder defense? Maybe, right? But you're going to run into Kawhi. Or B.I. and Zion, or the defensive juggernaut that the Timberwolves have been this season, or the Thunder have been this season. Or scariest of all, you run into the defending champs, who are still, in my opinion, the number one basketball team in the association. There is not a 5-man unit that operates like Jamal Murray, weak side initiator, 3-point scorer, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, 3-and-D, Michael Porter Jr., 6'10", 6'11", in the corner, shooting over any type of contest. Aaron Gordon doing all your dirty work, Josh Hart off a Mario supersized mushroom, and oh, the best player in the world. There's not a five-man lineup that's better than that to me. I think Lakers talk, I think Suns talk, I think Warriors talk at this part of the year is happening because of who is on those teams, not because they actually deserve it or will play like it at the end of the season. And that's something that I think means a lot coming from me specifically because I had the Warriors as my number one seed in the preseason. I thought they were going to be an excellent team. I don't want to hear about them, right? They're just not at that level. And the individual performances are there. And Draymond Green is still writing checks that Steph Curry has to go out and cash, saying he doesn't care about the Houston Rockets. Well, listen, bud, they are one game behind you. And if they catch up, you're out of the play-in. You don't even get a chance to play for a playoff spot. That's where the Golden State Warriors are at right now. That's where the Los Angeles Lakers are at right now. I don't think you can be afraid of any team that's 12 or lower in the West because they're all really bad. It's that 11, that top 11 group that really matters. And I only take the first six teams seriously. So I think it's really hard to say the Lakers even have an outside shot because when it comes down to it, we have 72 games of evidence that they're a mediocre basketball team.
See, I disagree in the sense that you're right. Denver's a step above from a performance standpoint. But then when you look at OKC, Minnesota, the Clippers, the Pelicans, the Mavericks, those top six, as you mentioned, there's some inexperience there and there's some inconsistency there. If those two things overlap, perhaps a hot team at the right time, a Phoenix, a Lakers, a Kings. I really don't see Golden State making a legitimate run, but I would say my three teams that I'm toning in on, the Suns, the Lakers, and the Kings, if one of those teams can get hot, then you never know. But you are right to say Denver's a step above. The question will be, could a Phoenix or a Sacramento get a big-time performance against a Denver and OKC that puts them over the top and catapults them towards the team that they thought they were going to be at the start of the year? I think that's what becomes interesting about the West. To your point about the East earlier, or to all of our point about the East, it really does feel like it's still Boston's conference. They're the team that's clinched a playoff spot thus far, but they're beatable. We've seen it time and time again, and it's one of those things where you have to see it to believe it. So if you want to tell me that Tatum and Brown can win a championship, they should probably go win a championship, and then I'll believe you when I finally see it.
I hear you. I mean, it's hard for me to focus on this right now because it does feel like we've glossed over a major headline in the NBA so far in that this Raptors scandal, Chris. I just can't seem to get it off my brain at this point.
So let's get right there, and no pun intended, but we'll pivot right up north to Toronto because I do think this is incredibly important. Last week on Pick and Pod, I had the pleasure of talking with Mr. Lochran and Dr. Talent, as Ben Oppenheimer calls him, and we talked about the integration of gambling into NBA League Pass. Ooh, scary, right? Well, how about this? I think Jontay Porter is about to get suspended for life from the NBA. I think Adam Silver makes an example out of him that nothing is greater or more important than the integrity of the game, right? Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing. Several betting irregularities over the past several months are the reason why Porter is under investigation. Funnily enough, the brother of Michael Porter Jr. So, you know, keeping it in the family here on Pick and Pod. Got a lot of Porter talk today. This one, not so positive. Well, the prop bets involve Porter games on January 26th and March 20th. And people went back and looked at the film from these games. There was a three-pointer that Jontay Porter chucked up at the end of the shot clock. It went in. And you can see him look visibly frustrated after. Okay, you know, that you opened yourself up to investigation right there. In the game on January 26th, there was increased betting interest on the under for his props. There was an over-under for his made three-pointers at 0.5. And as part of a daily report to users the next day, DraftKings said the under on his threes was the biggest money winner for bettors of any NBA player props from bets that evening. Now, Porter played that night for 4 minutes. He left after he reported an eye injury aggravation to the team, and they allowed him to sit out. That's one way to get some unders to cash. Now, I'm not saying that one example is the be-all, end-all. But here's the thing. On March 20th against the Sacramento Kings, Porter played 3 minutes before reporting an illness to the training staff and not returning to the game. He attempted one shot. He had 2 rebounds. His over-unders were set at 7.5 points and 5.5 rebounds. And in that next day DraftKings media release, can you guys guess whose prop bets were the number one money maker from the whole day in the National Basketball Association? So, yeah. Also, multiple betting accounts tried betting large amounts, upwards of $10,000, $20,000 on Porter unders in that January game. Now, we know that limits vary by sportsbook and miles. You know, maybe your guys at FanDuel would have allowed a bet so large, maybe not, but they're typically about $1,000 to $2,000, the absolute limit that you can bet. People were trying to do whatever they could to bet the under against the Clippers, and then a little later, the under in that other game. Sorry, against the Kings, right? He's on a two-way contract. He's making $415,000 this season. But if you look a little more into Jontay Porter, you'll find out he's made all sorts of money in all sorts of other ways. He's got a Discord where he calls himself Tay, doesn't go by any other name, just Tay, and he gives out investing tips. There have been times where from his investor's account, he's quote tweeted parlays on NBA games and said, thanks for the cash. This three-legger was a hitter. He made a video, a YouTube video, about how he turned $5,000 into $100,000 investing in stocks. This is a guy who very clearly knows what he's doing. And that is why. Darko Rajakovic, the Raptors head coach, said he never doubts injuries. He never doubts honesty from players. Porter reported an injury. He sat him out for the rest of the game. It was that simple. This is crazy.
I mean, Chris, this is the modern world we live in. You see, obviously, I've had the opportunity to cover the Brooklyn Nets this year, and the main on-floor sponsor at Barclays Center is FanDuel. It says it under both baskets, two large fonts. Under both baskets, you can see it from the upper deck. FanDuel invests serious money in the NBA and in particular franchises when it comes to sponsorship. I think it creates an obvious sort of conflict of interest there. There used to be a certain point in the sports, gambling history where leagues wanted to distance themselves as much as they possibly could. I mean, there was a point where you wouldn't have any professional teams in Las Vegas simply for this reason at a certain point. Obviously, that's changed now. And I think, we're in a dangerous era. Obviously, we all know about the Shohei stuff, the Ipe stuff. You're going to hear about this more and more. And in the case of Jontay Porter, it's particularly sort of jarring because it involves prop bets. Prop bets they can be quite literally controlled by a single player. In terms of previous betting scandals, Headache Smith at Arizona State, the Black Sox even, it's all about getting multiple people involved, and then you only have a certain chance at successfully throwing a contest. In the case of prop bets, Jontay Porter can personally decide to hit the under on every single one of his prop bets, and that's what exactly happened two times. And, I think that's enough in itself to say that something suspicious was going on. The obvious ties to cryptocurrency and day trading make him an even more susceptible kind of person to this sort of scheme. Mm. I just think, there's no going back at the end of the day. There's too much money. I've said it before, I'll say it again, in that gambling is into the alcohol and tobacco, and in some cases, firearms category, where should it be legal? Should it be illegal? Well, it doesn't matter in America as long as there's the financial backing at a congressional level, right? There's no taking away guns in 2024. There's no taking away alcohol in 2024. And at the moment, I'd be pretty darn surprised to see FanDuel or DraftKings go anywhere. They have the type of lobbying power. They have the financial power that they are a major player in American politics at this point. And that is here to stay. Whether that's a good thing or not, I think we're going to see a lot of lives ruined, and I think we're going to see a lot of suspicious betting activity over the next 20 years. But whether that's going to change is, I think, kind of that ship has sailed.
I worry about the legitimacy of the games at a certain point, like I said this last week on the show, is there going to come a time where we're having NFL conversations about the NBA where, oh, it's scripted and this is how it was always going to go? I don't want to have those conversations. I don't think those conversations have any merit to them when we have them about the NFL.
Yeah.
So I certainly don't want to entertain that with the NBA either. And you just start to wonder, like, is this going to get into guys' heads? Are a team like the Pistons going to band together and figure out some way to salvage a season that is unsalvageable from a financial standpoint? I don't know how creative these guys are going to get with it if they choose to do that.
You saw that angle,
right?
Of it?
And here's the thing too, like, for as much as everyone wants to say, oh, the players shouldn't be doing well, if you're a guy who's barely in the NBA, you're trying to make ends meet, I can't necessarily blame you for trying to use every tool at your disposal to do what you're passionate about and keep financially upright. I can't say that that's a morally atrocious thing to do. Now, it's not perfect. Obviously, you'd love to see the game be played for the sake of the game.
It's natural.
Right. But at this point, when the NBA is entertaining this sort of behavior and they're putting gambling into their app, you just start to wonder how murky the water is really going to get. And this is coming from someone that has a very open mindset about sports gambling. I'm not against sports gambling in any sense of the word. What I am against is when leagues like the NBA, and I'm sure it's coming with the NFL or Major League Baseball if it's not there already, start to get in bed with the idea that it's another way for them to personally benefit as a league. And that's when it gets murky.
What interests me the most is that in most cases, athletes are so wealthy where you'd say, oh, they're not susceptible to this. And Chris, this is a conversation we've had. I'm not even sure if it was on Pick and Pot or not, but regarding Josh Hart and his football parlays, if you recall this. And
it
was,
I don't think it was on Pick and Pot.
That Josh Hart was
road trips.
Allowed to go on Twitter and say, hey, these are my NFL. I literally think it was a screenshot of either a FanDuel ticket or a DraftKings ticket.
So he's very open about subscribing to a monthly Discord that gives out parlays.
Yes.
And it's like, I don't know the exact name. Let's say it's Parlay 123. And he'll be like, hey, at Parlay 123, wife's happy. Like,
thanks for the cash.
Thanks for the watch.
Yes.
You know, like.
And, you know, the fact that, you know, Josh Hart doesn't seem like, hey, well, Josh Hart's never going to intentionally go under on a prop bet to make up losses. But the fact that Josh Hart is allowed to publicly partner, and I don't even know if it's a sponsorship or he's genuinely grateful for cashing these picks, but one thing is for sure, Josh Hart is very public about him gambling on the National Football League, and that obviously creates a dangerous element. And I was screaming about this to Chris, saying, how is an NBA player allowed to bet on the NFL? Let's say he loses his NFL picks, and he could obviously have the dangerous gambler's mindset. Hey, let me just go under one time. I miss a couple threes, and I could get a couple bands. I mean, that's it. Once you have the gambling mindset, that's only one step away to say, hey, yep, I can profit off this. If you're a gambler, you have potential to intentionally go under on your prop bet. That's just the gambling mindset. I don't think you can really separate gambling on sports and considering affecting your own performance for that very mindset of gambling.
It's just such a slippery slope, and there's really no reason that it has to be this way. I almost feel like the NBA is doing a disservice to themselves by trying to get too involved, where players like Porter and others will be like, well, if the NBA is embracing it, why can't I as a player? Because it just speaks to the mentality that the league is trying to cook up at the moment, or maybe not intentionally trying to cook up.
Or if they're profiting off of it, why can't I, man?
Right, and they're just allowing it to kind of happen, maybe not endorsing, even though I'd argue they are, by putting it into their app. That's a whole other moral debate we can have. But really, it's just such a slippery slope. There's no better way to put it.
I think Miles is right. Like, we're too far deep. No one is
going
to turn around.
No going back, yeah.
They're going to make an example out of Porter. They're going to make an example, you know. Maybe the takeaway is, and I know you have to be careful with, like, unlawful, you know, termination rules and things, but whether Porter's innocent or not, where there's smoke, there's fire, there's too much smoke, you're suspended for the rest of the season, and we're going to cut your paychecks. Like that, right? It's just a matter of how willing is the NBA to put their foot down right now, because they need to be willing to stomp it. Mm-hmm. And any toe tapping around any sort of nuance that needs to be addressed is going to bite them tenfold back.
And I think, you know, given the way that it was caught, if you will, given that it was the next day public, I believe it was DraftKings report, if I'm not mistaken, it was on a DraftKings sports book. Given that it's public, it's all about these are the ways that we keep betting involved while keeping our game legitimate, right? Because if there are these betting irregularities, we will find it in the next day's report. So in a way, just the nature of this is also like it has two sides for sports gambling in that you could make the case that it's sort of a justification. Hey, you do this, you will get caught. And, you know, obviously the more sophisticated the scheme, the harder it would be to detect. But let's say Jontay Porter got 15 buddies involved and they got 15 buddies involved. If you got enough people involved, you could start to make money off of it. But at the moment, we have to acknowledge that it'd be pretty hard to create a successful scheme this way, because to go undetected would mean that you're not profiting at the level that it goes detected, meaning you got to get a lot of accounts involved. They all got to be spent in small units, but it's not that easy to successfully pull this off for more than a short period of time. And in a way, this Jontay Porter case has proved that. It's gone after two games. He might never touch a basketball again.
See, but I just don't like the fact that we're having this sort of conversation as it pertains right to NBA basketball to begin with. Like, the fact that this is even a topic of discussion is a problem in and of itself, and it just makes me sad that this is where we're at right now.
I mean, we're going to have to wait and see. And I think, you know, this trio, will be talking about this, whether it's on Pick and Pod or not, in regards to what comes out of this, but I do think we're reaching a point of treadmilling here where we're kind of just waiting to see what the league discovers, what the league rules. I'm going to let them do that. Let's take it to our bread and butter for the rest of the show, the Knicks and the Nets. Guys, start with the Knicks just because Colin's got a Knicks shirt on today from last season's 75 years of New York Knicks basketball collection. And you got to note that in year 76, you're seeing a Knicks team that I think has pretty uniquely positioned themselves in regards to Knicks teams in our lifetime. They have draft assets. They have draft capital. They have young players still in Deuce McBride and even Rokas Jokubaitis that have potential. And most importantly, they've got two All-NBA caliber players. They've got Josh Hart, who went 6.5 years without recording a triple-double, now has 6 for his career, all coming from this season. What the hell? And Dante DiVincenzo, by the way. Well, if you take a look at who's made the most three-pointers in a game for the New York Knicks, it's no longer J.R. Smith because Evan Fournier took that spot. And against Evan Fournier, Dante takes his record. And let me tell you something. That's the most inspired defense I've seen Evan Fournier play in his career.
He knew.
He wanted to hold on to that. Maybe the NBA's got to look into the fact that former Nick Malachi Flynn had a through-the-jersey conversation with DiVincenzo, and on the next play, Flynn forgets to close out, and DiVincenzo gets the record.
And did you see Josh Hart guarding Flynn? You remember this? A couple games back, a couple weeks back, close out, a nice shot, half-ass close out. I don't know. It's the same situation. It was identical.
Kind of funny. Maybe Flynn's like, hey, you know, Josh had my back, I'll have yours. I got to. Yeah, it's just funny, right? But basically, I think when you look at these additions, you know, I had a tweet get some traction and some people really did not like it. I said Kevin Durant brought all his friends to the Nets and they were one of the biggest disappointments.
I didn't like it. I'll tell
you
why.
In sports history, Jalen Brunson brought all his friends to the Knicks and they have their only 6 career triple doubles and the Knicks single game 3-point record in the best season the Knicks have had in my lifetime in their first year.
Those aren't really Kevin Durant's friends like that.
That's not. You're making a distinction of
that's
friends.
That's not equivalent at all. We're talking about the Nova boys versus Durant.
Come on, Kyrie's his boy.
As opposed to the Nova boys.
That's his dog.
That's like his work friend, though. You're kind of right. Like the Nova Knicks are a little bit different.
Harden was like a frat brother to him. You know, they're not best friends.
That's a professional relationship versus a real relationship.
All right. Well, listen up. The Knicks are good. They're really good. And they're 2.5 games back in the Eastern Conference of the two seed. The Bucks are 46-26. The Cavs, without Donovan Mitchell still, are 44-28. The New York Knicks, potentially getting Mitchell Robinson back tonight, are 43-28, getting ahead of the Orlando Magic now by a full game. And guys, I just want to know, do you think it matters where the Knicks finish seeding-wise, or do we think that the Pacers, Heat, 76ers, Magic, Bulls, Hawks are all kind of on the same level where they're just going to be expected to blow through that first round no matter what? Does this matter?
I think the seeding matters insofar as you want to have home court advantage in the first round. So obviously you would prefer to have the 3-4 over the 5 or the 6 spot in the East. It looks as though the Knicks are going to accomplish that goal. Then it comes down to really who do you match up against. I'd feel better about playing the Magic if I were the Knicks than I would about playing a team like Indiana. And then at that point, it's about health. This has always been about health since around the beginning of February for this Knicks team. And Dante DiVincenzo really showed up in a big way for them against the Pistons. Now, it was the Pistons, but breaking the single-game three-point record is no small feat. Did it against the guy who originally set the record, Evan Fournier, as you mentioned, Chris. If they can get that level of play from Dante DiVincenzo, along with what they know they can get from Brunson and a healthy Randle, which that is a question mark, and a healthy Ananobi, question mark again, they're a deadly team. Mm-hmm. Yeah, then you're talking about a team that can go 6-7 games against a Milwaukee, against a Boston, and a team that should be able to easily dispatch the Pacers, the Magic, and others. So for me, this is about, can the growth of the players who have stepped up, the Dantes, the Deuce McBrides of the world, the Isaiah Hartensteins, can that be sustainable in the playoffs and then have that be combined with the health of other guys like a Jalen Brunson, the Ananobi, all those members of that crew? If that's the case, there's no reason the Knicks can't go to the Eastern Conference Finals. And if they get to the Eastern Conference Finals, anything can happen in my estimation, because we've seen how badly Coach Tom Thibodeau wants to get to the NBA Finals with this team. We know he loves coaching in New York. We know he loves the group of guys that he's assembled. It's a team made for him. If there's ever going to be a time for him to strike in his coaching career, it's within this one, maybe two-year window he has and is going to have with the New York Knicks.
Yeah, I mean, the second and third tier of the New York Knicks have been pretty unbelievable over this stretch. I mean, the main guys go out, and you're still hanging around in this, you know, top-tier team in the East. It could have easily happened where these top names in Mitchell Robinson and, of course, Julius Randle go down, and then they fall to a 6-7 territory. But, you know, they wrap up the season series with Detroit last time out. I'm happy about the DiVincenzo threes, but I think it is an important point that it was against the Detroit Pistons, guys. Is he going to do this in the playoffs? I don't necessarily know. I mean, he's the type of guy that can be that spot-up shooter in a given night. Can he do it for a 7-game series? I don't really know. But you got to give the Knicks credit in that most teams, I'd say, in the NBA, you lose two of your top five options, you're going to be in a tough spot. And the Knicks have done a great job to not do that. I don't know if it seems like it's all going to gel at the right time. I think, like you said, coming out of the injuries, that's what it's all about.
But here's the thing. It can gel at the right time. That stretch where everyone was there, and it was a very small sample size, admittedly, is telling. Because if you get that sort of play and you get what you may be able to get now from a Deuce McBride or a Dante DiVincenzo, and you know what? I'm going to throw Precious Achiuwa into that category as well. He became like Diet Julius Randle for a little while, a couple of weeks ago. If you can get that from him off the bench against teams like Boston and Milwaukee that are not the most physical squads in the world. Now, Giannis is on the Bucks, different story altogether. Him aside, if the Knicks play their bully ball against those teams, I don't know if Boston or Milwaukee are going to be able to necessarily handle that, because they went through the regular season with the idea that it's all about getting to the playoffs. The Knicks went through the regular season with the idea that, no, when you come to the Garden, we are going to play tough defense, like KP says all the time. You go to the Garden, you're going to get beat with metal bats for 3 hours, and the Knicks are most likely going to win the ballgame. If that's the level of intensity they play within the tournament, there is no reason they can't take a team like Boston or Milwaukee the distance. It doesn't mean you're going to win, because sometimes talent wins out. Sometimes a Giannis, a Tatum, a Brown, a Lillard hits that shot, and you just got to shake your head, clap your hands, and move on to the next. But I'm telling you, with the way the Knicks play defense, you get Mitchell Robinson back, especially against a team like Milwaukee. That could be scary, because then you got someone in the paint that has the wingspan to guard against Giannis and put perimeter defenders like Deuce McBride, who's really grown, OG Anunoby, who's amazing on the perimeter. That's a scary combination.
And Chris, going back to your question, I don't think that it matters all that much. Whether they end up in the 3, the 4, the 5, that first round matchup is going to be a series that's supposed to be pretty smooth. I mean, they've done enough this year to earn that.
I think they're good enough to exactly. Like, they're good enough to where it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have a 37.5% chance of beating Boston. I think they have a 48% chance of beating Milwaukee. I think they've got a 60% plus chance of beating any other team in the East. And so for the New York Knicks, the expectation is win 7 playoff games. Win the first round in however many. Go down in 7 in the second round, and it's okay. That's all right. You took someone the distance, a Boston, a Milwaukee. Okay. Give me 7 playoff wins, and we're good. We'll revisit this. We'll see how Mitchell Robinson reintegrates with the team per.
You're saying force a game 7 in the second round. That'd be your satisfied.
If it's against a team like Milwaukee. If it's Philadelphia without Joel Embiid, you need to win 8 playoff games. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you gotta win. Per Mr. Wojnarowski, during this podcast, Robinson is active and available tonight. He will be trying to play. So we'll see how that ages. We'll see when Anunoby and Randall, if Randall comes back, whatever's going on there.
And that's so important, because when healthy, when right, just when there, period, Mitchell Robinson is one of the best offensive rebounders in the NBA. And for a team like New York that has seen its three-point shooting slowly, incrementally get better, his presence makes a huge difference, because now you're looking at a situation where you miss the initial shot. Okay, Big Mitch gets the offensive board. He could kick out to someone like a Dante, a Bojan Bogdanovic, even a Precious Achiuwa.
The shooters are there.
You're looking for a second chance bucket. Mitchell Robinson could help set that up. Just having him there at all makes a big difference.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Rangers clinching the playoffs, the Knicks getting back. They're about to, you know, have people witness the firepower of their fully armed and operational space station, battleship, to quote Star Wars. I do think that, hey, that team is going to be scary. And I think we got to go now down either the D or the 4. You pick. I'll take the D train personally, a little closer here to Fordham. But down to Barclays, talk about these Brooklyn Nets. I want to read you guys something about the Nets draft picks. It's 0 draft picks in 2024. 2 first-round draft picks owned over the next 3 years, and nothing to show for it, besides having players that teams offered a lot for, and, oh, you didn't take any of the offers. The latest being Shams Charania confirming a report that the Houston Rockets basically said to the Nets, hey, you know all those first-round picks of yours that we have? We'll give you some of those back. We'll give you Jalen Green. Just send Mikal Bridges down south. Nets said no. Nets, I reported last year, they turned down 4 first-round picks from the Memphis Grizzlies for Mikal Bridges. This is the sunk cost fallacy to a T. They already turned down big trades for Bridges, so now that they're getting offered less, they can't take it because they didn't take more. They're digging themselves a deeper hole instead of just trying to get out of this one. The losing is for nothing. They don't have their own picks. The man behind it all, still employed and seems to have good job security. Miles, your evaluation of, I guess I want a twofold answer here. Mm-hmm. How Sean Marks has made it to this point, still the Nets GM, and given that he is, what the heck he needs to do to turn this around?
Well, at this point, he's in a difficult spot. And to answer your question about how he's still in this spot after getting the job in 2016, it's his relationship with Joe Tsai. And, you know, Sean Marks lives a very comfortable life. He goes home to a very large mansion in Greenwich, Connecticut. He sits with his young sons courtside 3 hours before at Barclays. And his job is to lead this franchise to wins, lead this franchise to possessing assets, dealing those assets in a profitable manner. And he's had the job for 7 years. And as you said, Chris, not much to show for it at the moment. And, you know, has he get, he hasn't set himself up for success. And so what is he to do at the moment? I don't really know. It's tough to make a decision on Bridges. And, you know, when you hear Shams come out these months later and say, hey, Green was on the table, Brooklyn said no. And I'm not here to doubt Shams' credibility, but I'm saying there's a lot of things that go into a deal that could sink something major like that before it actually gets done. Do we really think that Houston was ready to do this? Everybody has to hit the okay button, fire off a major prospect in Jalen Green. It's like, I think it's a little easy months later to say they have. I just think the media has blown up what they could have gotten for Bridges a little bit. Sure, they mishandled, but was that ever there? I don't.
But at what point can we stop making excuses for the Brooklyn Nets front office? I feel like every other show, we're forced to be like, well, the Kyrie and the KD thing was a tough situation. They're big personalities. Steve Nash.
Haven't done something right in a
really
while.
Coached. But like, I feel like this is a recurring trend, and typically when that becomes a recurring trend, you know it's time to make a change. So I don't know how much further Sean Marks' tenure will be in Brooklyn. I don't know if he'll be here in the next 2 years. I don't even know if he'll be here this time next year. So for Brooklyn, these reports, upsetting if you're a Nets fan, because Jalen Green is a supreme talent. Now, is he a transformational talent? I don't know. That depends on who you ask. I really don't know where I stand on that for what Brooklyn had at their disposal at this moment. There's a good chance it might have ended up being the same thing that they got with Mikal Bridges, where he's really good, he'll go off every once in a while, but he's not a transformational guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to change your franchise in an instant the same way that a Giannis can or that a Jalen Brunson did for the New York Knicks, put them on the right track. Now, you could argue Randall got the ball rolling, and that could be true, but make no mistake, Brunson is the conductor of that train. So for Brooklyn, right now, it's kind of about finding that guy. Now, you might not be able to do that in the draft. You'll have to try, but you might be left in the situation where you got to attract someone via free agency or try and get someone to demand a trade to Brooklyn. Crazier things have happened. Now, I don't know if Sean Marks is going to be the guy to lead that charge.
I mean, you look at it where they're at right now, 27-45, 5.5 games back from the Atlanta Hawks for the 10, the final play-in spot with 10 games to play. It's almost, I mean, it's safe to say it's certain that they will not grab that 10. They'd have to go on an unbelievable run.
Yeah.
Atlanta is actually playing decent basketball once again, so they'd be hard to catch. The Brooklyn Nets are going to head into this offseason likely as the 11, and that's a funny spot because they have solidified their spot as not being Detroit, not being Washington, and not being Charlotte. The bottom three teams that have been eliminated from playoff contention for a little bit now in the East. And that's why it's kind of funny for Sean Marks, because he told Joe Tsai, we're not going to be bottom tier, and they weren't bottom tier. They were just outside of the playoff picture. And in some ways, what my mind tells me is he might have done just enough to earn himself another year under Joe Tsai. I don't actually know. I should know off the top of my head. But his contract situation, if they're set to renew Marks anytime soon, I'm not sure. But, you know, in a way, Chris, given the assets that they have, he may have done enough to buy himself some time, because there are true bottom feeders in the Eastern Conference, Charlotte, Washington, and Detroit. And Brooklyn proved, hey, we are not in that solid bottom tier. There's really four tiers when you look at the East. Brooklyn's in the third of four, but they're simply not in the four.
Brian Lewis at the Post reported on March 8th of 2023 that Marks will be staying in his job, that he'll be running the team this season, that he's in lockstep with Joe Tsai. And
I think that
report, he could just copy-paste and write again this year. The dismantling of the Nets' Big Three was lambasted in some quarters as the NBA's worst failure in decades, and had some speculating that Marks could be ousted. He is expected to be back for 23 to 2024. Another source has described Marks and Tsai as being in lockstep.
So they're in lockstep going where? Underground?
Exactly. Nowhere fast, as Nick DeLuca would say.
But that's the thing about owning an NBA franchise. For Joe Tsai, it is a guaranteed profitable situation. He can sit back and be the 11 year in and year out and collect. It's a TV deal league. That's all that matters.
Man, you're so negative on these pods. Talking about sports, very negative on the pick and pod, Mod. But you do make an eloquent point in the sense
he's in no hurry. If the Nets were not turning a profit without winning games, obviously it'd be a different situation. But I think Joe Tsai is a little bit apathetic to the situation.
Well, easy to be apathetic when you have the type of money that Joe Tsai has. And unfortunately for Nets fans, they're the ones that are suffering. And it's so hard not to think about where they were just 3 years ago. Think about spring of 2021 and where Nets fans' heads were at compared to now. 3 years ago, they were thinking about winning the NBA Finals, and you know what? They came very close to doing so.
And the press room was packed day in and day out. Nick Friedel would be in there asking the questions that nobody wanted to ask.
He's not there anymore.
He's not there anymore. And now you look at the press room, four or five dudes in there after a loss. It's a different identity. It's a different – they might as well be sort of, you know, a Charlotte-type
non-major. Well, they're still in the greatest city God ever created. So that does make them a little bit different.
Wouldn't make you seem that.
You know, it kind of reminds me of where the Mets were after the 2000 season for a couple of seasons. So in between 2000 and 2006, there was this weird period of Mets baseball where they'd bring in some B-list, C-list stars, and then every once in a while they'd get a guy who they thought they were going to be, who was going to be an A-lister, like a Kaz Matsui, thinking it would change the franchise, and it didn't. And the Mets still got media coverage, but they weren't the Yankees of the town because there wasn't that rivalry that everyone was looking forward to. You think about the early 2000s, Yankees, Red Sox dominated the tabloids. The Mets didn't have that after the 2000 season where they won the pennant. The Nets are kind of in a similar spot where they're trying to figure out where do we go from here. And you know what the Mets did in 2006? They got some young talent. David Wright, Jose Reyes came into their own. For the Nets, it might be about can you get some young talent to bring you to where you want to be, and then eventually you can attract a free agent or make a trade for another guy that could really put you over the top.
Yeah, I mean, that's the realistic path, but that's just, man, that doesn't seem likely at this point. And what's tough is that, as Chris has, you know, informed us, the picks do not set them up very nicely to get anything done. I mean, young talent-wise, not much on the horizon.
Well, I think that's the problem, right, is that usually you're bottoming out, you're playing for something. The Nets kind of playing for nothing. We'll keep you guys posted on that.
That's going to do it for this edition of Pick and Pod, a production of WFUV Sports. For Miles Grossman and Chris Persianen, I'm Colin Lochran saying so long from the Bronx.